Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, Chapter entitled Krishna and the Gopis Meet, Text Number 31 and 32. Shri Gopya Uchu, Maivam, Vipo, Arhati, Pavan, Gaditum, Nishamsam, Sanchyachya, Sava Vishayam, Tava, Pada, Mulam, Bhakta, Prajaswa, Duravagraha, Ma, Chajasman, Devo, Yatadi, Purusho, Bhajate,
Mumukshum.
Maivam viporhati bhavangaditum nishamsam.
Maivam viporhati bhavangaditum nishamsam.
Maivam viporhati bhavangaditum nishamsam.
Maivam viporhati bhavangaditum nishamsam.
Sanchyachya sava vishayam stava padamulam.
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 Bhakta bhajasva dura. Bhaktaja bhajasva duravagraha machya jasman.
Bhakta bhajasva duravagraha
machya jasman. Bhakta bhajasva duravagraha machya jasman.
Bhakta bhajasva duravagraha machya jasman.
Devo yatadi purusho bhajate mumukshun.
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 Maivam viporhati bhavangaditum nishamsam.
Maivam viporhati bhavangaditum
Sanchyachya sava vishayam stava padamulam.
Sanchyachya sava vishayam stava padamulam.
Bhakta bhajasva duravagraha macha jasman.
Bhakta bhajasva duravagraha macha jasman.
Devo yatadi purusho bhajate mumukshun.
Devo yatadi purusha bhajate mumukshun.
The beautiful Gopi said,
Ma,
not.
Not.
Evam,
in this way.
And Vipo, O powerful one. Ahati, should. Pavan, your good self. Gaditum, speak. Nrishamsam, cruelly. Sanchyachya, renouncing completely. Sava, Vishayam, varieties of sense gratification. Tava,
Tava.
Yo.
Yo.
Padamulam.
Padamulam.
Feet.
Feet.
Bhakta.
Bhakta.
Worshipping.
Worshipping.
Pajaswa.
Pajaswa.
Please reciprocate with.
Duravagraha.
Duravagraha. O stubborn one. Machajya.
Machajya.
Do not reject.
Do not reject.
Asman.
Asman.
Us.
Us.
Deva.
Deva.
O Supreme Personality of Godhead.
O Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yata.
Yata.
Just as.
Adi
Purusha,
Adi Purusha,
the primeval Lord,
the primeval Lord,
Narayan,
Narayan,
Bhajate,
Bhajate,
reciprocates,
reciprocates,
Mumukshun,
Mumukshun,
with those who desire liberation,
with those who desire liberation.
Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Text 31. The beautiful gopi said, O all-powerful one, you should not speak in this cruel way. Do not reject us who have renounced all material enjoyment to render devotional service to your lotus feet. Reciprocate with us, O stubborn one. Just as the primeval Lord, Sri Narayan, reciprocates with his devotees in their endeavors for liberation. Translation responsibly. The beautiful gopi said,
O
all-powerful one,
O all-powerful one,
you should not speak in this cruel way.
Do not reject us.
Who have renounced all material enjoyment.
To render devotional service.
To your lotus feet.
Reciprocate with us.
O stubborn one. Just as the primeval Lord, Sri Narayan,
reciprocates with his devotees,
in their endeavors for liberation. Text 32. Our dear Krishna, as an expert in religion, you have advised us that the proper religious duty for women is to faithfully serve their husbands, children, and other relatives. We agree that this principle is valid, but actually this service should be rendered to you. After all, O Lord, you are the dearmost friend of all embodied souls. You are their most intimate relative, and indeed their very self. Purport. Sri Krishna is the soul of all souls, their dearmost friend and well-wisher. As stated in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 11.5.41, Devashi Bhutakta Nunam Pitrinam Nakinkaro Nayam Rini Charajam Savatmana Ya Sharanam Sharanyam Kato Mukundam Parikritya Katam. O King, one who has given up all material duties and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, who offers shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, the great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even one's forefathers who have passed away. Since all such classes of living entities are part and parcels of the Supreme Lord, one who has surrendered to the Lord's service has no need to serve such persons separately. Authority descends from the author of all existence, the Supreme Lord. Natural figures of authority such as husbands, mothers, government leaders, and sages gain their power and authority from the Supreme Lord, and should thus represent the absolute truth to those who follow them. If one wholeheartedly engages in loving service to the original Supreme Truth, one need not indirectly serve the absolute truth through the above-mentioned secondary authorities. Even a soul surrendered to God, however, continues to serve the spiritual master, who is a direct, not an indirect, representative of the Supreme Lord. A bona fide acharya, or spiritual master, is the transparent medium leading the disciple to the lotus feet of Krishna. All indirect authorities become obsolete when one is directly in touch with the absolute truth. The gopis wanted to explain this basic point to Krishna, and some of the bolder young girls among them attempted to defeat Sri Krishna with his own statements, as exemplified in this verse. Omagyan timanandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshun militam jena tasmai Sri Gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swa padantikam. Vanchakalpaturubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So it's interesting here that the gopis are speaking in pure Sanskrit. Sanskrit is not an easy language to understand or to read and to speak or to know. So sometimes it is said that Vrindavan is a very simple place, which in one sense it is. And it is said in the Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami. He explains that Dwarka is perfect, which is Krishna's abode when he's a prince. Dwarka is perfect, but more perfect than Dwarka is Mathura. But most perfect is Vrindavan. Sri Vrindavan Dalmaki. Radhisham. So, it means that Krishna stayed for 125 years when he manifested his pastimes on earth. So the first 10 years that he came, he spent in Vrindavan. The next 18 years he spent in Mathura. And the next 96 years or so he spent in Dwarka. So, Dwarka is very opulent. Huge palaces, as we were explaining last night at the loft. If you claim to be God, which some jivas foolishly do, you know, we do have people in the world who say they're God, Sai Baba and Bhagwan Rajneesh, different people, they say they're God. It's okay to say that, but then you have to come up with the goods. You have to prove it. Right? It's okay to say I am God. But then you have to prove you're a God. So, as we were pointing out last night, one of Krishna's opulences is that Krishna had 16,108 wives. Now, anyone who's married knows that even having one partner is difficult enough in this day and age. What to speak of having two? What to speak of having 10? What to speak of having 16,108 partners? Yet Krishna, it was easy for him to keep them satisfied. And as we explained last night, he built a palace for each queen in Dwarka. And each palace was 2 miles wide and 2 miles long. How many square miles was that? 4 square miles. So it's 4 square miles of palace. That's just the palace. You know, that's without the courtyard and the outer regions of the rest of Dwarka. That's just the palace. There's 16,108 palaces, each one 2 miles, 4 square miles in diameter. Right? So this is Dwarka. Dwarka is supremely opulent. Then you have Mathura, which is closer to Vrindavan. Mathura is on the border of Vrindavan. It's just next door to Vrindavan. And in Mathura, things are also very opulent. It is that Dwarka is perfect, Mathura is more perfect, but Vrindavan is most perfect. In Vrindavan, actually, it is described, things are even more opulent there than they are in Dwarka.
Although normally we think that Dwarka is more opulent, but actually Vrindavan is more opulent. But Vrindavan is a rural area. It is like countryside. And it's forest, Vrindavana. There's 12 main forests in Vrindavan. And Vrindavana, Vana means forest, Vrinda, the forest of Vrinda Devi. Vrinda Devi in this world is incarnates as Tulsi Devi. Vrinda Devi is one of the gopis, one of Krishna's principal gopis, one of the assistants of Radharani and Krishna. And when she comes into this world, she appears as Tulasi. So the reason we worship Tulsi is because we are worshipping Vrinda Devi, because we're asking, please allow us to come back into Vrindavan. If you don't get her permission, you can't go into Vrindavan. It's not possible to enter Vrindavan. That's why we worship her. Quite amazing how Prabhupada set up our ISKCON program. And Tulsi, worship of Tulsi is such an important part of our philosophy. You know, we have Tulsi touching our skin always, right? We chant on Tulasi beads like that. We're contacting her when we're chanting her holy names. And we worship her. Right? And it's recommended, actually. It is said that if one, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada points out, that if you chant the holy names in front of Tulsi Devi, it is 1,000 more times powerful than chanting otherwise. So this is her position. So Vrindavan, there are 12 main forests in Vrindavan, and one of them is Vrindavan itself, and that is Krishna's favourite forest. And Vrindavan is more rural, but actually it's also more opulent than even Dwarka. There's more opulence there. It's even more attractive and beautiful, because it is most perfect. Right? Dwarka is perfect, Mathura is more perfect, but Vrindavan is most perfect. And here it is described, because then we think, well, if it's more simple there, because in Dwarka Krishna is a Kshatriya, but in Vrindavan he is a Vaishya, and the Vaishyas are more simple than the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas have a lot of opulence, right? A lot of majesty, a lot of power, a lot of potency. The Vaishyas tend to be more simple. Right? They herd cows, that's their pastime, just like you'll see Krishna with the cows in some of the pictures, right? So he's just herding the cows. So it's a more simple way of life. You see Vrindavan, like you see Krishna in Vrindavan. He's dressed very simply, right? Balaram is dressed very simply, Krishna is dressed very simply. You know, there's not like huge crowns and armour. Right? Krishna left Vrindavan and he did not come back when he went with Akura. Although he did come back, the Acharyas describe, but in Krishna book at least, in Srimad Bhagavatam, says he did not come back, he did not return. So the Brijvasis had not seen him for years and years and years, actually. So then there was a solar eclipse, so everyone travelled from Vrindavan to Kurukshetra. So Vrindavan is here, right, and then Delhi is there, Hastinapur, and then above Hastinapur is Kurukshetra, right, and Krishna was living in Dwarka, which is over on this side of India, or looking from your directions over on this side, like that. So, all the Dwarka buses, they travelled to Kurukshetra, and all the bridge buses travelled up to Kurukshetra during the solar eclipse. And at Kurukshetra, Kurukshetra is a holy place, that's where the battle was fought, it's a holy place. And there are five great lakes there, and the five great lakes were created by Parashurama. And Parashurama, after he killed all the Kshatriyas, 21 generations of Kshatriyas, because the Kshatriya killed his father, and he was an incarnation of the Lord, and the Kshatriyas were impious, so then he killed 21 generations of Kshatriyas in retaliation. And it is said at that time that the Kshatriyas who fled to save their lives from Parashurama, they fled to other parts of the earth, and that's where the other cultures came from. That's where the Aztec culture came from, the Egyptian culture, the Mongolian culture in China, the Greek culture, the Turkish culture, the Vikings, the Romans, all these different Kshatriya cultures, they moved to different parts of the earth to escape. And that's why there's so many similarities between those cultures and the Vedic culture. Like Devamrita Swami points out in his book, what's it called? Searching for Vedic India, like that. So it points out, and what's the scientist about his name? Sataputta Prabhu. Sataputta Prabhu also points out the connections between all the ancient cultures. You can see all the gods are the same. You look at the Norse gods, the Roman gods, the Greek gods, the Egyptian gods, the Aztec gods. It's all the same as the Vedic gods. There's no difference. So it's just the same culture spread out all over the world. So in Kurukshetra, at that particular place, then Parashuram, after he destroyed all the Kshatriyas, he built 5 sacred kuns or lakes in order to bathe in to purify his sins, if there was any sin for killing all the Kshatriyas. So then he took bath in those lakes, and those lakes became places of pilgrimage. So then during the solar eclipse, then all the bridge buses and Dwarka buses, they came to Kurukshetra to take bath. Because when Rahu or Ketu, which are the inauspicious shadow planets, which are the shadowy planets, they're like dark planets, when they eclipse the sun or the moon, then that light, because normally the light from the sun and the light from the moon is auspicious, it purifies the earth. But during the time when Ketu or Rahu are eclipsing the sun or the moon, then the light is inauspicious. I was in India in 1996, I think it was, and there was a partial eclipse of the sun in Vrindavan. And India is an amazing place because 24 hours a day you can get up and walk out onto the street and there'll be someone walking around. Right? Isn't it? Yeah, any time of the day. If you go to like the cities like Calcutta or Delhi, like, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning there'll be hundreds of people walking around. I don't know what happens there, but, you know, it's always going on. And during this eclipse, it was a solar eclipse, I was in my room, and you weren't allowed. They told the devotees, don't go out in the light of the eclipse because it's impure. It will contaminate your consciousness. So we all stayed indoors, but I was looking like out my window, and there wasn't one person on the street. It wasn't one person for the whole time of the eclipse. It was just completely empty. So then, all the bridge buses and all the Dwarka buses, they went to Kurukshetra, and everyone took their bath in the lake in order to purify themselves during the eclipse. So the bridge buses, they got to see Krishna, and they hadn't seen Krishna for years and years and years. And Krishna was dressed as a Kshatriya, right? He was on his chariot, and he had a big helmet on, beautiful golden helmet with jewels bedecked, encrusted within it. And he had armour on. Right, and he had his mace, he had his sword, you know, he was a Kshatriya. And Radharani saw him, and the other gopis saw him, and they said, what are you doing dressed like this? And he said, take off your armour, take off your helmet, get off the chariot, put on your peacock feather, right, and then just come to Vrindavan with us. It's a full moon night, it's very beautiful. Just come to Vrindavan, and we'll all dance on the bank of the Jamuna like we used to do. Right, you pick up your flute, put down your bow and arrow, pick up your flute, right, and then we'll enjoy like we used to enjoy. So that is the mood of Vrindavan. It seems like it's more simple, and it is more simple. It's a more simple way of life then. It's very simple, you know, Krishna's a cowherd boy, right, and he dresses more simply, but actually it's more opulent even than Mathura and Dwarka. It's the most opulent place. Right? And it is opulent because the facility for Krishna's enjoyment is unlimited in Vrindavan. It is most perfect for Krishna's enjoyment. It is said that the trees there are called kalpavrikshas. Kalpavriksha means a desire-fulfilling tree. And it is said that the branches of the tree and the leaves of the tree are made of jewels. Right? The very branch, the very tree itself is made of jewels. And the leaf of the tree is made of jewels. It's actually like a green leaf, maybe like pure emerald, right? But it will be soft, it won't be like hard like emeralds. It will be soft, but it's made of pure emerald. So it's unlimited. Right? So it's not that the devotees, it's not that everyone gets bewildered and everyone thinks, you know, looks at the tree and they think, oh, you know, that's about $36 million, you know. We could use that for Krishna service. You know, it's not that everyone's bewildered by the opulence, but the fact is the opulence is superior to anywhere else in God's creation. It's the most opulent place. But it's also very simple there, and everyone is very simple-hearted, and they just engage in very simple activities like that. It's not that it's very complicated there. Life is very simple, but it is extremely opulent. But the opulence is overtaken by Krishna's Madhurya feature, which means his sweet pastimes. It's very simple, and everything is based on very sweet, loving dealings between Krishna and his devotees. And that's the essence of life. That's the essence of the existence there. Even though it is so opulent, no one becomes sidetracked or bewildered by the opulence. So it is interesting here, because the gopis are speaking to Krishna. They're supposed to be just cowherd girls. Right? Just supposed to be cowherd girls. Now, if you meet cowherd girls, they're not necessarily very educated or very intelligent or very sophisticated. But these cowherd girls who are with Krishna are speaking pure Sanskrit to Krishna, which is amazing. Right? The only people now on earth who speak pure Sanskrit are very learned pundits, very learned people, right, who know pure Sanskrit. Like Prabhupada knew Sanskrit. Right? He was able to translate all these books into English and comment on them and so forth. We can't even read the Sanskrit. If you look at the actual Sanskrit, I can't actually read the actual Sanskrit. And if I look at the transliteration of Prabhupada's English transliteration, some of the words I recognize. Like I can see, you know, within this verse, Atma. Atma means soul, or the very self. That's probably the only word I can actually recognize. Oh no, that's in the next verse. But so in the previous verse, and maybe Vipul. Vipul means the supreme person. And it's probably the only word I can recognize. But the gopis, even though they're supposed to be very simple, they're speaking to Krishna in pure Sanskrit. So this shows Vrindavan's supremacy in every way. It's not an ordinary place. And the gopis, even though they're supposed to be simple cowherd girls, they're actually more intelligent than great sages. Right? I mean, if you listen to what they're saying to Krishna here, right, you have to understand that Krishna's gopis and all his associates at Vrindavan, that's like Srimati Radharani, they may appear to be simple because they're cowherd people, but they're the most intelligent people in creation. I mean, these are just gopis, just cowherd girls, and they're saying to Krishna, O powerful one, you should not speak in this cruel way. Do not reject us who have renounced all material enjoyment to render devotional service to your lotus feet. They understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness perfectly. Right? Reciprocate with us, O stubborn one. Just as the primeval Lord, not Lord Narayan, they're speaking about Lord Narayan, the creator, the supreme being, reciprocates with his devotees in their endeavour for liberation. So they have such an intelligent nature, right? Such an intelligent, developed consciousness, far beyond anyone else in creation. They're the most intelligent personalities in creation. And, as it's said here, even though they're so intelligent and everything, but they're not dry. Their reciprocation with Krishna is not dry, it is very rasika, which means full of rus. They're calling Krishna, O stubborn one. Now normally when you come before Krishna and you offer some prayers to Krishna, you don't call him O stubborn one. Right? Or maybe you do, depending on how he's reciprocating with you. O stubborn one. But they're speaking to him like that because that's how intimate they are with him. Right? They consider him, or they accept him as their husband, even though they're not married to him in one sense. But in another sense, they've accepted him as their husband. So because they accept him as the husband, then they speak to him on the most intimate level. The wife and the husband speak to each other very intimately. Most intimately, in fact. Right? And they're saying to him, O stubborn one, meaning that the love of the residents of Vrindavan is in the mood of mamata. What does mamata mean? Yeah, Krishna is ours. Mamata. Mamata means mine. Right? That's how everyone in Vrindavan is thinking. Krishna is mine. Right? He belongs to me. Right? Krishna is my friend. Krishna is my lover. Krishna is my son. Right? That's a sense of possession. And that's what attracts Krishna's heart. Krishna wants that devotees have that sense of possessiveness towards him. He is my Krishna. He is my Lord. There's no one else. Right? There's only him. He is mine, and that's the way it is. So, in Vrindavan, this mamata, this sense of Krishna being mine, is developed to the highest level of consciousness. Right? So high that the gopis will even call him, O stubborn one. Right? You are stubborn. Right? You may be our Lord, you may be our husband, you may be the Supreme Lord even, but you are stubborn. Because we have come here in the middle of the night to enjoy with you. You have called us, in fact, to come here. We have come here. And now you're telling us to go home. Right? And now we are standing here in front of you with tears in our eyes, right? Completely dejected and brokenhearted by the way you have treated us. And still, you won't change your mood towards us. You are stubborn. Like that. Very intimate mood with Krishna and the gopis. And this is where the rasa is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is full of ras. When people hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes they fall asleep. Because they think, they may not be understanding the rasa. Or some people may think it's dry or it's ordinary or it's not interesting. Right? Some people though read Srimad Bhagavatam or sit in the Bhagavatam class and fall asleep. This is a sign that we do not have taste for the Bhagavatam, or that we find it uninteresting. Because if one actually has a taste for hearing about Krishna and Krishna's devotees, he will be in rapt attention hearing about the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Because there's so much rasa there, there's so much going on. Just in this one verse, there's so much going on in the mood between Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Right? There's so much sweetness in the relationship. So this is the way the devotees feel their satisfaction. So it is said that in the material world we have this sense of I and mine. Bhagavatam has said in the early cantos, aham mameti. Right? Aham means I, and mameti means mine, or those things connected to me. So in the material world everything is perverted. So we think I am the material body. Right? I am a man. Or I am a woman. Right? That is based on your material body. Right? So that's I. That's the conception of aham. I am a man. I am a woman. That's a false conception. That's not an eternal conception. So aham mameti. And as long as you think I, or if you think I am the body, then you think mameti. Mameti means this is mine. Right? I am a man, so these are my dotis. I am a woman, so these are my saris. Aham mameti. Right? And all the things which expand. This is my wife, this is my husband, these are my kids, this is my four-wheel drive, this is my little house with a white picket fence in Albert Park. These are my aham mameti. Things that are I and things that are mine. Right. Now this is perverted because we're in the material world, and in the material world the consciousness becomes perverted, right? It changes. But originally in the spiritual world, the I is opposite to what it is in the material world. Right? What is the I in the spiritual world? What is the aham, or the sense of identification, which is in the spiritual world?
Krishna.
Yeah, I am a servant of Krishna. Like that. Jivara Svarupahoy Krishnara Nitya Das. That is the conception of the soul in the spiritual world. I am, instead of in the material world we think I am a man or I am a woman. Right? In the spiritual world you think I am Krishna's eternal servant. That is the conception of I. And mameti means in the material world we think I am a man, so this is my wife, or I am a wife, so this is my man, like that. We'll have that kind of material conception in the material world. But in the spiritual world you think I am Krishna's servant, and Krishna is my friend, or Krishna is my lover, or Krishna is my son. Right? So the aham mameti is originally spiritual, but in the material world it becomes perverted and reflected improperly. So here, the gopis saying to Krishna that you are an expert in religion, and you have advised us the proper religious duty for women is to faithfully serve their husbands, children, and other relatives. We agree with this principle. We agree that this principle is valid, but actually this service should be rendered to you. After all, O Lord, you are the dearmost friend of all the embodied souls. You are their most intimate relative, and indeed their very self. So the gopis have rejected their husbands, their children, and their relatives. Right? Now this is immoral, it is adharmic, it is irreligious, and it is improper from a moral standpoint. Right? It is improper to reject the wife, to reject the husband, to reject the children, to reject the relatives, if they are properly following religious principles. If they reject religious principles, then it is allowable for you to reject their association, if they are rejecting religious principles. However, in this case, it's not that the relatives of the gopis, their children, their husbands, their relatives and so forth, it's not that they're necessarily being religious, but they're so attached to Krishna, they will even give up all their material relationships to come and be with Krishna. And that's why the gopis' love for Krishna is explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the highest emblem of pure devotional service in existence. Because they're willing to give up everything to be with Krishna. So that is the highest understanding of God consciousness. The highest sense of selflessness. That they will give up everything just to be with Krishna. Right? And there's no one else in creation who will be so self-sacrificing as the gopis are towards Krishna. They'll just give up everything to be with Krishna in an instant. One time Narad Muni was asked by Krishna. Krishna said, go to my devotees and tell them I have a headache. And tell them the only way to cure my headache is to put the dust of their feet upon my head. So Narad Muni, he said, but no devotee will put the dust of his feet on your head. But Krishna said, no, you go and ask and see what happens. So then all Narad Muni travelled around, he went to all the different types of devotees, and he went to them and he said, please, Krishna has a headache, we need some dust from your feet to put on his head. And everyone said, no, we'll not do that. I mean, can you imagine if, you know, Jit came off the altar and he said, you know, we need some dust from your feet to put on Krishna's head, right, he has a headache today, no one would do it. It's inconceivable, right? There's no way that you would put the dust of your feet on Krishna's head, right? So everyone said, no, we'll not do it. We'll go to hell if we do it. It's improper. It's an offence to the law. It's a maha aparad. But then when Narada, after going to all the devotees, at last he went to the gopis. And he said to the gopis, Krishna has a headache. And as soon as they heard Krishna had a headache, their eyes filled with tears. And then Narad Muni said, and the only way that Krishna can fix his headache, he said that he needs the dust from the lotus feet of his devotees. So the gopis said, take all the dust immediately, and immediately go there and put that dust on Krishna's head to soothe his headache. That's how intimate and how close they are with Krishna. Self-sacrificing. They'll sacrifice anything for Krishna. There's no one else in creation who will do that. That's why they're the highest devotees. That's why Lord Chaitanya says the gopis is the emblem of pure devotional service. There's no one higher. And Narad Muni said, aren't you scared that you'll go to hell? You'll get reactions? And they said, let us go to hell. We will go to hell for lifetimes. But if it means Krishna's headache will be, if Krishna's in pain and his pain will be soothed by our dust of our feet touching his head, let us go to hell. We'll go to hell for lifetimes. We're willing to suffer unlimitedly if Krishna is happy. So it's the highest level of selflessness. And it is very difficult to emulate. It's very difficult to follow. Like, we're reading these pastimes at the moment and we're meditating on this. You know, during the day we're meditating on this and we're trying to become more selfless in our devotional service towards Krishna, more pure in our devotional service. We're trying to become pure devotees. Let us practice pure devotional service, but we're so far short of what the gopis practice. You give it your best shot. You know, give it your best shot to become selfless like the gopis, and we just fall, you know, about 250 miles short. It's so difficult to be like them. But we have to keep practicing, keep trying. So as it says in the purport, the commentators have pointed out that we can give up our dharmic following of authorities if it is to surrender to Krishna, as the gopis have done. They've given up their material attachments to surrender to Krishna. Right? So there's no need for a devotee to give up his husband, to give up her husband, to give up their wife, to give up their children, to give up their relatives, if they are devotees. If they are devotees, that is a great blessing, and that is very favourable for our Krishna consciousness, so there's no need. But if they're not following religious principles, we may reject their association. But it says here that we should not reject Krishna's association, and similarly, we should not reject the spiritual master's association. If the spiritual master is in good standing, which he must be if he's the spiritual master, if he falls from the platform of the actual standards of devotional service, then he may be rejected also. But by and large, the spiritual master is qualified, then the disciple under no situation can reject the guru. Right? And this is the essence of spiritual life. Right? The spiritual master is called the Ashraya Vigraha. And what does the Ashraya Vigraha mean? Yeah, form of shelter. Yeah. So Archa Vigraha. Krishna is an Archa Vigraha, means he is a form that accepts our worship. So the spiritual master is the Ashraya. Ashraya means shelter of the devotees. Right? So we become trained by the spiritual master and purified by service to the spiritual master, and the spiritual master, by accepting our service, by giving us shelter and accepting our service and our worship, he is allowing us or training us to become qualified to one day serve Krishna. That's why Prabhupada is accepting our worship, just like we're discussing the other night with the devotees. Actually, in the Nectar of Devotion, it says that one should not accept worship in front of the deities. Right? Just like in the morning when we worship Tulsi, we wait for the deity's doors to be closed and then we begin to worship Tulsi, because actually it's an offence to worship anyone else in front of the deities. But Prabhupada accepts worship in front of the deities every morning, Guru Puja. Right? And we understand the reason Prabhupada is allowing this to happen, because Prabhupada is a very intimate associate of Krishna. A very intimate associate of Krishna. So he can do this, you know, based on his intimate relationship with Krishna, and is not an offence to Krishna. And the reason Prabhupada is accepting our worship, and the spiritual master, his representatives, are accepting our worship, is because they, by accepting our worship and training us to improve in our service to Krishna, they're training us so that we can one day become qualified to go and serve Krishna directly in the spiritual world. Right? So the spiritual master is accepting our worship and training us and qualifying us. And the devotees, especially the senior devotees within the community, they are the spiritual master's representative. Right? They're training us how to serve the deity very nicely, how to serve Krishna very nicely. Sometimes people have this conception that spiritual life is a the conception of the guru is that he must be someone who is always very blissful and happy, right? Always very happy, very smiling, very blissful, right? Just like we have that guru who goes around the world, Hindu guru, female, her name is Amma. Everyone knows this one? Amma? She's one guru. So she's famous for giving hugs. Right? Everyone goes to her. You line up for 1 hour, right? Hundreds of people. And you go up to her and she gives you a hug. And you feel very, because of her ocean of compassion and love that she's showing to everyone, then she's hugging them and she is, you know, uplifting their consciousness. And she has potency and she is having effect on people. But this is not the only function of the guru, actually. You know, if our guru only treats us is only giving us the soft side of his personality, this will not be for our ultimate benefit. You see, Prabhupada was not like that. Prabhupada had that side of being soft like a rose, but he also had the other side of being hard like a thunderbolt. And it's easy to accept the soft side of the guru, but it takes a very serious and very sincere candidate for devotional service. It's very serious to go back to Godhead to accept the chastisement of the guru. And actually the spiritual master reserves the chastisement for the more advanced disciples, the more serious disciples. And the chastisement and the correction is for the benefit of the disciple, to improve the disciple in the quality of his service so that he becomes qualified to one day serve Krishna in the spiritual world. One time Giriraj Maharaj, Giriraj Swami, Prabhupada's disciple, he said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, sometimes you are very heavy." Right? You think, you know, sometimes devotees are heavy. You know, can you imagine Prabhupada chastising you? And Prabhupada chastised heavily. He was heavy. Right. So he said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, sometimes you are very heavy, and it is very difficult to accept your chastisement." So he said, "How should we feel? What should be our mood when you chastise us?" And Prabhupada said, "You should feel very grateful that someone loves you and cares about you so much that they will take their time to point out your defects and to chastise you to improve you in your devotional service to Krishna." So this is what we have to learn to accept this mood. So we should never ever reject the guru. The guru can never be rejected under any circumstance. If he has fallen, that's a different thing. But if he is in good standing, his orders must be followed in all circumstances. And one must accept the guru's instructions and serve him selflessly and develop that mood of pure service to the spiritual master in order to become trained, to become qualified to serve Krishna. And one must be willing to accept the shelter of the spiritual master, the guidance of the spiritual master, the instruction of the spiritual master. And he must be willing to accept the mood of the spiritual master. This is very important. That as disciples, we should accept the mood of the guru. The guru will lead in terms of his mood. Right? Senior devotees will lead in terms of the mood, and the younger devotees need to learn from the senior devotees and the spiritual master what is the mood in serving Krishna. It's a very important thing, because you see devotees come to the temple in the beginning and they may have this conception that, you know, it's all spiritual and everything's lovely and we all go around and we say jai all the time to each other and we say Hari Bol like that, and it's all this kind of very lovely mood, which is a part of Krishna consciousness. That's naturally a part of Krishna consciousness. But if a senior devotee or the spiritual master points out one of your defects, right, and he may do this in a very, sometimes he has to use force or kriya, right, or he has to use some force or some chastisement, he's doing that for your benefit. And we have to learn to humbly accept this mood of chastising and try to understand what is the mood behind the devotee. Why are they chastising me like this? Why have I upset them? What have I done wrong, right? And I should be trying to improve in Krishna's service. This should be the mood. So devotees, they have to learn that mood of understanding the mood of the senior devotees, and especially of the spiritual master. And the spiritual master's mood, he has the prerogative to have whatever mood he wants. And Prabhupada was often very grave, very deep, very serious, sometimes very heavy, and other times he's very soft and very sweet. And the disciple should learn to accept and serve the guru selflessly, and by doing that he can become qualified to one day also become a servant of Krishna in the spiritual world. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
So you pointed out that like 30 people in the solar eclipse take bath. So how comes the light of the eclipse is auspicious or purifying the soul?
What's that?
How is the rays of the solar eclipse purifying the purifying the soul or our contaminations?
When there's not an eclipse, you mean? I don't understand.
Like Guruji, why the light of the eclipse is considered to be more auspicious or more purifying?
No, it's inauspicious.
But then why do people take bath on the eclipse?
they're taking bath because they want to, just like when Lord Chaitanya appeared in this world, there was a lunar eclipse. The moon was becoming eclipsed at that time. So everyone went to the Ganges, because the Ganges is pavitra, it is pure. So they went to the Ganga and they took bath in the Ganges, they went to Kurukshetra and they took bath in the lakes while the eclipse was on. Because by being in the purified waters of the Ganga or the sacred lakes, then one is not made impure or contaminated by the inauspicious light from the eclipse. Does that make sense?
Because then the people have to come out first, they will get dirty in the light of the eclipse.
No, but if they're in the Ganga, like, you know, constantly bathing, constantly submerging themselves in the Ganges, then they're covered by the Ganga's pure water, then they're not contaminated by the eclipse.
So they remain in the Ganga until the eclipse finishes?
Any other question or comment?
Just a small one. An aside, just sometimes confuse me. When Vrishabhas was carrying the camel, are we supposed to, because I've heard two sounds saying two different things, one, not yet, bow down and pay obeisance if it's the first time you've seen them in the temple, to go with other tongues? I've been told two things. The Krishna is clean, if you do this in front of him, then be told also that you never do this in front of Krishna.
Hmm.
So I don't know, which is the right thing to do?
It is permissible to offer obeisances to the Guru or to a sannyasi even in front of the deities. That's not an offence. But generally, to general devotees, like when we see a devotee, or, you know, a devotee we haven't seen for a long time or something, or if we see them in front of the deities, then we'll go outside and we'll offer our obeisances there. We won't do it in front. The spiritual master and the sannyasi are on a very exalted platform, so it is not an offence to pay obeisances to them in front of Krishna. Not an offence. But you should not touch their feet in front of Krishna. Like that. You can do that outside of the temple, but you should not touch their feet. Mataji should not touch their feet anyway. Like that. The woman should not touch the feet of the sannyasi or the guru. Like that. But if someone does touch their feet, it should be outside the temple, not inside the temple. Is that okay? Any other question or comment?
Would you like to comment on this word stubborn the gopis have used? It is in love.
Yeah.
But materially it's not a very good word to use for such exalted.
Yeah. We spoke about it earlier in the class. That the because the gopis, they consider Krishna to be their lover, or actually they desire him to be their husband. So you can only speak like this to the husband or the wife or to someone who's very close to you, a family member. So you may say, or very close friend, you may say, you are stubborn, like that. So they're saying to him out of love, you know, because Krishna is teasing them. They came all the way to see Krishna in the middle of the night, and they had to give up all their family relationships to come and see Krishna, and Krishna called them to come, and finally they get there to be with Krishna, and Krishna said, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why have you come for? And so he's teasing with them, and then they're saying, you're being stubborn, because we have come here to be with you, and you know we've come here to be with you, and you've asked us to come here and be with you, and now you've upset us because we've come all this way and you're treating us like this, and still you're not saying to us, okay, it's okay, you're being very stubborn, like that. So he's being like that. But he's doing that in order to increase their love and their attachment to him. See, the mood is with the gopis. There's two sets of gopis. There's the right-wing gopis and the left-wing gopis. The right-wing gopis are very submissive to Krishna, and the left-wing gopis are unsubmissive to Krishna. So left-wing gopis are headed by Radharani, right? Right-wing gopis are headed by Chandravali, Radharani's rival. Then the left-wing gopis, right? They always try to get the upper hand with Krishna, So you'll see in the pastimes, they always do things to make Krishna submit to them. And even the gopis, sometimes they capture Krishna. They capture and they surround him, you know, hundreds of gopis, and they bring Krishna, they tie him up, and they bring him to Radharani, and they say, "Now you've got to pay your obeisances to Radharani." Right? She is the queen of Vrindavan, right? You are just a cowherd boy, you should pay your obeisances. And Krishna does it, right? Because he sees it gives Radharani so much pleasure, right? But Chandravali, the right-wing gopis, they would not treat Krishna like that. They always pay their obeisances to Krishna. They think they're very submissive. But the left-wing gopis are unsubmissive to Krishna. So they're saying, these left-wing gopis are saying to Krishna, "You're being very stubborn." Because their nature is they don't like Krishna to dominate them. They do, but they also don't. Right? They have that contrary nature. Obama means they're contrary to Krishna. Means they like Krishna to dominate them, but they act like they do not like it. Right, so when Krishna tries to dominate them, they say, "You're being very stubborn." They try to get the upper hand on him. So sometimes he gets the upper hand, sometimes they get the upper hand. Just like there's one pastime when they're in the boat, and Krishna says to them, there's a whole pastime, maybe we'll tell it another time. And they're in the boat with Krishna, and Krishna is dressed as a boatman, like that. And there's water coming in the boat, filling up the boat. So then Krishna says, "You have to throw everything overboard." Right? So they're throwing everything overboard, you know. And he said, "The water's still coming in. Throw all your bangles and everything." So they take up all their bangles and they're throwing them all overboard like that. And the water's still coming in. And Krishna says, "Okay, take off your saris. Right? Throw them overboard." So then they're like, you know. And then Radharani, she jumps in the boatman's arms and she holds it. She says, "Boatman, please save us. Please save us." And then she feels under the cloak of the boatman, she feels there is something there, and she looks and there's the flute. And then she sees it's actually Krishna on the boatman. So sometimes Krishna gets the upper hand, sometimes the gopis get the upper hand like that. So just like this. So in this pastime, there's the rasa is there between Krishna and the gopis. So, any other question or comment?
A small point about the gopis speaking the Sanskrit, pure Sanskrit. Did they speak anything else back then?
Yeah, in the spiritual world, in Vrindavan, there's a language in Vrindavan called Brij Bas. So that's like it's similar to Sanskrit, similar to Hindi, but it's its own language. It's like a Vrindavan language. So they speak that. But because they're also very learned, they can also speak Sanskrit. They can speak a variety of languages. It says in the Nectar of Devotion, one of Krishna's 64 qualities is that he's learned in many languages. So he can speak even to animals. He knows the language of every animal, every bird, every animal. He even speaks to trees. Like that, he can speak to anyone in any language. So the gopis also have these talents. Any other questions?
Just a comment. Everyone hears all the qualities and leaders of Krishna, Radha, Krishna in general. Once all of the love is lacking, and yet, the mood is all in reference. Such a contradiction, when we worship, all in reference.
When we worship?
Well, because we worship in the mood, all in reference.
The point is that there's two different laws, right? There's one called Vaiti. Vaiti means rules and regulations. The other one is called Raga. Raga means spontaneity, right? Out of love, out of affection. So those two moods are there simultaneously. So the mood that Lord Chaitanya came to teach was the mood of raga, the mood of spontaneity, which is what the Srimad Bhagavatam was teaching in the 10th canto. So the mood of spontaneity towards Krishna. Now, Rupa Goswami teaches, because we have to understand the science, because Nectar of Devotion is called the science of Bhakti Yoga. That's what Prabhupada calls it. So you have to understand that Rupa Goswami teaches the science. He teaches that up until the platform of Anatta Nivritti, Anatta Nivritti means when we still have material desires in the heart. Right? Until they're all gone, you have to follow the Vaidhi, the rules and the regulations. Otherwise, you'll become offensive to Krishna. You'll commit offences. But when you get past the platform of the anattas, or the material desires in the heart, at that point, you can enter into this spontaneous mood fully. So it means that at that point, you'll still be doing externally, you'll still be doing all the rules and regulations, but internally the feeling will be love. Yeah, the feeling will not be awe and reverence. It will be love. But still externally, you'll do all the rules and regulations to set an example for others, because they need to do that. Now, we're on the platform of anatta nivritti, means we're trying to get rid of the anattas. The material desires are not cleared yet, so we can't give up the vaidhi yet, because we haven't surpassed that platform. But at the same time, we're attracted, you know, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we're attracted to the spontaneous love of Krishna and the gopis, and Krishna and the devotees in Vrindavan, spontaneity. So when we do our artis to the deities, you know, it's not totally in awe and reverence. You know, there's a feeling of attraction to Krishna, there's a feeling of meditating on the residents of Vrindavan, their mood in the way they serve Krishna. But that cannot be embraced fully yet because there are still material desires in the heart. So we can't give up the vaidhi, but we do cultivate that mood simultaneously. But one of the main points about that mood of raga is that it is an internal and private cultivation. It is not something that you do externally. You don't say, oh, now I'm on raga, so I'll just, you know, do the arti any way I want, you know, because I'm spontaneous now. No, externally you'll still follow all the rules and regulations, but internally the feeling of love will be very intense to Krishna. Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we should develop that feeling, you know, like, because Prabhupada has installed Radha and Krishna here. So we should develop that feeling of affection towards Radha and Krishna. We should develop that mood of when we worship the deities, Gaudiya, Radha, Krishna, Jagannath, Balaram, so on. We should develop a mood of affection within our heart, you know, and that will gradually overtake the awe and reverence in due course of time. But as long as we're not on the platform of past anatta nivritti, as long as there's still material desires in the heart, you can't give up the vaidhi altogether, and you can't fully embrace the raga mood. So it should be cultivated, but it should be cultivated simultaneously next to each other, until the point that you get to a very advanced platform. Does that make sense? Any other question or comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.